She believed this vision was from God telling her that the church was missing a feast in honor of the Eucharist. It took about 20 years, during which Juliana petitioned a number of bishops and priests, until the bishop of her hometown convened a synod in 1246 and ordered a Corpus Christi celebration to be held in his parish each year. The bishops at that time could order feasts in their own diocese. The celebration of Corpus Christi became universal only after Juliana's death, when in 1263, Pope Urban IV issued a papal bull making Corpus Christi a feast throughout the entire Latin Rite. The Feast of Corpus Christi reminds us that Jesus, our Lord, is truly present in the Eucharist, body, blood, soul, and divinity. The belief in the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist was simply an accepted tenet of faith for a number of centuries until controversy erupted in the 9th century. Holy Roman Emperor Charles the Bald was curious as to whether or not the Eucharist we consume at Mass was also the historic body of the Lord born of the Virgin Mary. As a result, two different views emerged for the king to consider. One, that what we consume at Mass was miraculously the same historical body of Jesus, born of the Virgin Mary. The opposing view responded that this was nonsense, that what we taste and see after the consecration is clearly still bread and wine, but that Christ was truly present spiritually only as a symbol. It took a couple of centuries to sort out both positions, defining their benefits and problems. Those who defended the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist was a good thing. However, it might lead to a belief that if you took the consecrated host and placed it under a microscope, you would be able to find the historic cells of Jesus in there somewhere. A rather unpleasant idea for those who had an aversion to cannibalism. The opposing view escaped this problem by focusing on the belief of Christ's real presence in the Eucharist simply as a metaphor, a position clearly not supported in John's chapter 6, where Jesus commands us to eat his flesh and drink his blood. It wasn't until the 11th century that the church could confidently articulate the how of the real presence of Jesus in the Holy Eucharist. It boils down to this. Before consecration, the bread and wine are just what they are, bread and wine, which is their substance. After consecration, something miraculous happens. The substance of the bread and wine disappear, and what emerges is truly the substance of the body and blood of Christ, while still remaining the substance of bread and wine. This is called the miracle of transubstantiation, and it only took 8 centuries for the church to address the question of how the real presence of Jesus comes into the Eucharist. Okay, everybody still with me? And you got the short version. I joined a book club at Oak Harbor Library, and this month we are reading A Tree Grows in Brooklyn by Betty Smith. And it's narrated by a young girl, Francie Nolan, who grew up in a very, very poor portion of Brooklyn in the early 19th century. She didn't have much in her life, but apparently going to Mass was one of the highlights. Francie describes her feeling as she attends Mass. As she listened to the consecrations, one for his body and one for his blood, she believed that the words of the priest were a sword which mystically separated the blood from the body. She knew, without knowing how to explain why, that Jesus was entirely present, body, blood, soul, and divinity, in the wine in the golden chalice and in the bread on the golden plate. It's a beautiful religion, she used, and I wish I understood it more. No, I don't want to stand it at all. It is beautiful because it's always a mystery, like God himself is a mystery. I can relate to this passage. It is a mystery indeed. Why on the Feast of Corpus Christi is the gospel about the stories of the loaves and fishes? Worried about the crowd and lateness of the day, the disciples wanted Jesus to dismiss them so they could go find provisions and lodging. Instead, Jesus said, "Give them some food yourselves." With what little they collected, the 5 loaves and 2 fishes, Jesus, as he would do later at the Last Supper, looked up to the heavens, blessed them, broke them, and gave the food, not to the crowd, but to the disciples to distribute. Why is this significant? Because the time was approaching when Jesus' earthly ministry on earth was coming to an end. This sequence of blessing, breaking, and giving of food, as Jesus would demonstrate to the disciples at the Last Supper, would become the miraculous food, his body and blood. His apostles would continue to provide after his departure, as he commanded, "Do this in remembrance of me." There's another question that begs an answer now that we know the how Jesus comes to us in the consecration, and that is the why. Why does Jesus want to give of himself to us, body, blood, soul, and divinity? When we come forward for communion, we are not receiving a thing into our body, but rather a person. The Eucharist is a person. When we receive communion, we are receiving Jesus himself into our souls as food for our journey, as would the apostles when they began their journeys following in Jesus' footsteps. How many times have we heard the expression, "You are what you eat"? When this communion with the body and blood of Christ pours into our souls as food for our journey, we become what we eat. Become Jesus to your family members. Become Jesus to your co-workers. Become Jesus to your neighbors. And become Jesus to the person you see in the mirror each morning. A few Sundays ago, as I was driving back to the lake, I realized something. Usually on the way here, my mind is filled with all the things I have to do in the coming week. The lousy weather keeping us indoors. Losing my nice tan. But on the way home, I usually find myself filled with joy and peace. And after doing this reflection, I realize now it is because I have been here with all of you as a family, sharing in the communal meal of the Eucharist. Like Francie Nolan, I don't try to understand the mystery of it all, but it is a beautiful religion, and I always feel better leaving here than I did before I arrived. The how of understanding the Eucharist is an important place in the tradition of the Church, but it is also important not to lose sight of the question why. And of course, I couldn't end this without a little something from one of my favorite authors, Father Andrew Greeley. It was a little story he had written for the Feast of Corpus Christi. Remember the 2 little kids who, as they would later tell the story, almost drowned in the storm? After their father had brought them ashore, what did he do? Well, of course, he gave them something to eat. Now, their father was not much of a cook, and their mother had gone shopping with their big sister, so he didn't quite know what to give them to eat. "What would you like to eat?" he asked them. "Ice cream," said the little boy. "Chocolate ice cream," said the little girl. "With chocolate sauce," the little boy insisted. "And whipped cream," added the little girl. "And raspberries," the little boy finished their litany of wants. Well, the father wasn't even very good at even making chocolate ice cream sundaes with raspberries, chocolate sauce, and whipped cream. But his little kids wanted it, and they had just recovered from a terrible scare, so he would do his best. And do you know what else he did? Well, he cut a banana down the middle for each of them and emptied the whipped cream can and called it a banana split. And they didn't even know what that was. And the kids loved every bite of it. And do you know why the daddy made the banana splits for them? Sure you know why. Because he was their daddy and he loved them.